All right, good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the conference committee together on a bill for an act, conference committee on Senate file 1717. Committee is called to order. We have in front of us, we have the side-by-side language, and we also have a delete-all amendment for the conference committee report. And if council wouldn't mind, I'd like her to go through the delete all. That's what we'll work on, work off of.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So starting on page one, the title will be changed to reflect that the independent contractor language has been added in Article 2. But basically what this draft conference committee report does is the first article contains the labor and industry Dolly's housekeeping bill with a couple of added provisions, and then Article 2 is the independent contractor misclassification of worker bill. And so I will go through with that in mind. Anyway, the first article, as I mentioned, is the Dolly housekeeping bill, and basically the sections 1 through 10 are some technical housekeeping changes that were needed to for federal compliance regarding apprenticeship training. So that goes through page one. You'll see that apprentice is changed to apprenticeship. It's just technical that the feds required to continue to qualify for apprenticeship programs. So that's section two on page two, section three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, and 10. And now we're on page six. And then we get to section 11. And this language is the fire sprinkler language, and it was contained in both the Senate file and then also was contained in Senate file 1653. And so this section 11 and then also section 18, those are the two fire sprinkler sections. And basically, it just says that the state building code may not require the installation of fire sprinklers. And then the section 18 requires that before entering into agreement, a licensee shall offer a prospective customer the option to install fire sprinklers. So that's the language that requires a licensee to make the offer to a customer, and it has to be included in by reference in the agreement. So those are the two fire sprinkler provisions. And then continuing on page 7, section 12 is deleting some redundant language. Again, this is housekeeping regarding issuance of licenses. Section 13 clarifies some license fee calculations in conformance with the new fee structure that was put in place in 2010 and 11. Section 14 was a Senate provision, and this was just a clarification of who can approve internet continuing education courses. And this adds this organization, International Association for Continuing Education and Training, to those who may approve the courses. And section 15 clarifies the definition of agricultural buildings to allow for county assessors or municipal county assessors to make the determination on in the property law classification for agricultural buildings. Section 16 updates some language, again, from plumber's apprentice to unlicensed individual. Section 17 does the same. And section 18, as I mentioned earlier, was the fire sprinkler language. And then the repealers, I quickly went through and kind of looked at them as the Department of Labor and Industry testified to in our committee that these were all rules that were actually in statute now. I don't know if anyone needs to know exactly what they are. The first one is a Board of Appeals, final interpretive authority, and then some other code administrative oversight. And as I understand it, though, they're just repealing rules that already appear in statute. So that's Article 1. I don't know if there are any questions on Article 1, but I can continue with Article 2.
Members, any questions on Article 1? Ms. Fonte.
Okay. Article 2 is the employee classification of independent contractors. And what?
Mr. Chairman, before we go on,
yes, Senator Thomason.
Just to be clear, though, so the Section 11 and Subdivision 4D says must not require the installation of fire sprinklers. But if an individual family owner who wants to build a new home wants to have a sprinkler system installed, they may. Is that correct?
Yes. And Senator Tomasoni, Section 11 also ties with Section 18, which is the written contract. And this language is a little softer than what we passed last year and was vetoed by the governor. It says, before entering into an agreement, basically the contractor shall offer prospective customers the option to install those, and they have, the agreements must be signed, dated by both the contractor and the customer.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members, continuing on.
Ms. Fonte.
Article 2. This would establish a pilot program that would replace the current independent contractor exemption certificate. So these, basically they're getting rid of the independent contractor exemption certificate language. Some definitions in Section 1. Section 2 provides a date for the exemption certificate, I believe. And then we're deleting some language in Section 3 about the independent contractor certificate and kind of goes through the definitions of what constitutes an independent contractor. Section 4 is really establishing the pilot project, and it would last 2 years from July 1 of 2012 to June 30th of 2014, and there'd be no fee for registration. You'll see down on line 15.31, it starts with some registration exceptions. And then I believe in the House on, I don't know what date is anymore, Saturday, was it? That on line 16.13, Representative Westrum added the handyman exemption in clause 8.
Handy person.
I'm sorry. Handy person exemption. And that, I believe, is $15,000 in a year. And this Section 5 talks about the registration application and then deletes on page 17 all the language from the independent contractor exemption certificate. Then going over on page 18, it continues to talk about the complete application, what they need to include in that. Over to page 19, Section 6 talks about the website. The commissioner has to develop a website where individuals can register and submit their registration. Page 20 makes some more changes regarding the exemption certificate, Section 7. Section 8, this talks about the enforcement remedies and penalties, and it does provide that a failure to register, the fine is, the penalty maximum is $2,000. It talks about that the commissioner shall forgive the penalty if the person registers within 30 days of the date of the penalty order. But then in Section 9, this is also added in the House on Saturday, that the notice of the penalty order needs to include information, include a statement that says that the penalty will be forgiven if the person registers within 30 days of the date of the penalty order. Section 10 is notice to the commissioner. Again, make some changes regarding the exemption certificate. Section 11 talks about how this data is classified, the data that the individuals who are registering, it's private data or non-public data. Section 12, this repeals the contractor 2% withholding and actually was included in a bill that Senator Peterson had. I think it was in taxes, and I'm not sure of the status of it within a tax bill, but we're including it here since it does relate to the contract, the independent contractor exemption. And so then Section 13 is just talks about applicable law, making some changes to refer to this the independent contractor section. And then in the repealer, we are missing something that I'll add that the House did have on the repealer for the 2% withholding. I need to include that Minnesota statutes Section 290.92 subdivision 31 is repealed, and that repeals the 2% withholding that should go with the provision Section 12. In paragraph A, that repealer gets rid of the advisory task force on employee misclassifications, no longer needed now that we're taking care of the pilot project here. And then there are a number of rules that will also be repealed that were relating to the independent contractor exemption certificate in paragraph B. And then section 15 provides for effective dates. And that those are the two articles. And if there are any questions or if there's something missing, please let me know.
Thank you, Ms. Fontaine. And members and guests, just so everyone's aware, the reason we're bringing Section 2 or Article 2 into this legislation, that's at the request of Representative Sanders and Senator Peterson. The bills got held up a little bit through the legislative process, and there are concerns that they would not be able to have a conference committee and get these worked out in time before we adjourn. And nobody knows quite when that's going to be yet, but we know probably sometime soon. So at their request, we have included that language. It's a very important piece of legislation that had broad bipartisan support in both the House and the Senate. Questions, members? Representative Hosh?
On Article 2, did that pass the Senate? I know it passed the House.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Senator Michelle.
Do you want an amendment then to mirror the Senate Council's suggestion for that?
For the 2% repealer?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess if you want to adopt the conference committee draft report and just instruct staff to make changes as discussed, or should Anita, Ms. Newman?
Mr. Chair and members, we can just bring in the language from the page and line from the House bill because that has the correct language and the effective date.
Okay, very good. That's what we'll do. So do we have a motion to adopt the conference committee report? Yes.
Are we going to adopt the report and then have discussion?
Yep, we'll adopt it and then we'll have discussion.
Actually, Mr. Chair and members, we needed one other section needs to come out before you adopt anything.
Okay.
Page, it's in the independent contractor section. It's page
13,
section 2. That's in there erroneously. In the initial draft of the bill on page 14, line 3, individual was worker. That was changed in previous amendments, but the effective date didn't get dropped. So the section makes no change to current law. So it's an effective date that referred to a change that's not made. So that's an
effective date that's ineffective?
An effective date that has no meaning because it's current law, exactly.
Why don't you?
Does somebody need to make a motion to take that out? Or should we just take it out?
Okay. We should move out.
Ms. Fontaine, how does this work? Are we going to adopt the report, and then can we discuss it further if anyone wants to remove any provisions, or would that be done now?
Mr. Chair, what you could do is keep discussing, and then after you make the changes, then you can adopt it and instruct staff to make the changes and prepare a conference report for signatures.
Sure.
So we're going
to... Yep, why don't you... Changes first. Yep, let's... If there's any... recommended changes, members, we'll bring those up now. Representative Lemire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As much as I like this language, I'm talking about on page 7, line 7.16 to 7.14. I gave my word to Rakowski from the Department of Labor that I wouldn't support anything controversial, and this could have potential to be controversial. So I would like to strike that language if I could, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Is there any testimony from the audience on this provision or Representative Mahoney?
Never been able to testify.
Welcome to the committee.
Here.
Please state your name for the record.
I'm Representative Tim Mahoney. And to this point that Representative Lemire brought up, and on page, is it 12? Yes, 12. Line 33, is the sprinklers language. The way this bill is particularly written, I'll back up a little bit. I've been involved in the building codes since I came here. Unfortunately or fortunately, more than I ever cared to be. The fire sprinkler language that you have in here says it can't be in the code, but that someone, if I was building a new home, I could put sprinklers in. The question that I have is, if it's not in the code, what covers residential sprinklers? There is no code, so I could hook it up to my water heater if I chose to, or without any kind of a backflow preventer valve or a check valve, so that the water could go into my sprinkler system, sit there for several months, and if there was ever a serious vacuum pulled on your system, you could drain that stagnant water back into the water system. There really does need to be a process. I mean, I'm not a huge supporter of requiring sprinklers in a house myself. I've put them in myself. But you do need to have a body that tells you what's the proper way to install them. And I don't believe that this language actually does that. I believe this language just allows you to put them in if you choose to, without any overarching outline of how you would do it. So just to bring that up.
Representative Mahoney, you said you've put them in yourself before. So what did you use as a guidance for you to put them in either your home or someone else's?
I might want to take the fifth on this.
Understood.
I actually had them in my home when my children were growing up because as a younger man, there was a fire in my parents' house. And the fire was in the mechanical room, and my younger brother was caught in the basement. Fortunately, he got out. So what I did is I installed them at the top of the basement steps and the bottom of the basement steps, and in the mechanical room. And on each particular line, I put in a check valve, which only allows flow one way. That's a simple way to do it, but I had no, looking through the code books, I had no guidance other than as an industrial standard. Because they have the codes for the industrial standards, they just don't have them for residential.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that would wish to testify on this provision before we vote on it?
Mr. Chairman, to that point.
Senator Tomasoni.
So if on page 12, if somebody enters into an agreement to put a sprinkler system into their home when they build their home, is it required to be done up to code? Or did we take that out completely?
Representative Hosh, or did you want to mention something?
No, just after Senator Tomasoni.
Okay.
Question is answered.
Do we know? It seems to me if they do opt in, then it should be done up to code.
Ms. Perry, please state your name for the record.
Sure. Members of the committee, my name is Pam Perry. I'm the Executive Vice President of the Builders Association of Minnesota. We represent the residential construction industry. Fire sprinklers are mandated to be put in single-family home or dwellings more than two units or more. So there are standards on putting in fire sprinklers in residential units. For example, if you build a condominium with four units in it, that's going to be required to build to most likely the commercial code. And because even though it's a residential unit, there are standards on how to put fire sprinklers in a residential unit. So there is a standard in place and in the code. The second issue is there are a number of products that are added to residential homes that are not covered in the building code. In those circumstances, builders are required or subcontractors are required to follow manufacturer standards. And so that's what we do.
So, Mr. Chairman, this language then doesn't it doesn't do something that what Representative Mahoney just asked. He asked a pretty serious question, I think. And so this language doesn't say that it can be put in any way you want. It has to be, it still has to be put in according to codes.
Ms. Perry?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, that's correct. It would be highly problematic for a builder to install incorrectly and costly. So it's not in anyone's best interest not to follow manufacturer standards, or in a circumstance where a homeowner would want a fire sprinkler in their residence, to not follow the building code that governs fire sprinklers for commercial construction.
But,
Senator Tomasoni,
does the language allow them to not install it that way?
Ms. Perry?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, I don't believe so.
Representative Hosh?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and also to kind of Senator Tomasoni's question. The way that I read it is that I read Section 11 as saying you cannot require the installation. It doesn't say that the building code can't. Is prohibited from adopting a standard or certain code for the installation of fire sprinklers. It just can't be required of the individual to install them or the builder. So I think there can still be standards. There still can be an adoption within the code. It just can't be required for a single-family residence.
Thank you, Representative Hosh. Senator Tomasoni?
They both agree. That's good.
Okay. Any other testimony? Please state your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm Jerry Rosendahl, State Fire Marshal with the Department of Public Safety. The discussion that's going on right here, I think, points out the need that this type of discussion go to the rulemaking process, which is in place for this. The decision on whether or not there will be in the future a requirement for fire sprinklers in one- and two-family homes has not been vetted with the stakeholders and the various opinions on this whole issue. This bill prevents the rulemaking process from going forward, which is not gone through the process yet. If that process goes forward, we're over a year before this requirement, if it's deemed to be in the Minnesota code, we're over a year before that requirement will go into place, and then for new construction only. So I urge you to allow the rulemaking process to go forward.
Sure. Thank you for that testimony, and I do have a question for you. It is my understanding that, because I would prefer that this go through the building code, the advisory committee, but from my understanding that they've voted on this issue a couple times already, not to include it. I have a record on, and this is after the bill was vetoed by Governor Dayton. In his veto letter, he stated that he would like this to go through the advisory code process, and I don't disagree with that. On December 14th, 2011, I have a vote of 10-2 that to not include this, and on February 14th, I have a vote of 8-4. Now, this is from the advisory committee not to include these provisions.
Mr. Chair and members, I understand that, and I think you, I would dare say that those the two were fire service professionals that were on that committee. The recommendation, that advisory committee, goes to the Commissioner of Labor and Industry, as I understand it, and this, in my view, would preclude the Labor and Industry from coming forward with a final recommendation on whether or not this is included, because, again, that entire process has not gone through the process.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that would wish to testify? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Sherry Menyon, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association and the Fire Marshals Association of Minnesota. We would urge the committee not to adopt this provision. Again, echoing the comments you just heard, we believe the process ought to be allowed to continue to work. Early on, the discussion had been, were there any accommodations that could be reached to mitigate the costs that the builders or homeowners might incur? At the advisory committee, and there were only two discussions that were relegated to this major issue, at the advisory committee, numerous recommendations were made for consideration that would be trade-offs and reduce the cost or burden of implementing this public safety initiative. Every single one of them was turned down. One included non-residential, non-homesteaded, rather, cabins, individual cabins, exempting them. There was a phase-in period that was recommended so that if the department decided to go through with the implementation of sprinklers in residential homes, there would be the beginning with 5,000 square feet or higher, and then reduce that in three different time periods until you got to 2,000 square foot homes. There was also the elimination recommended of several current code provisions, such as egress windows, smoke alarm connectivity, and a variety of others. I can read them all if you like. Several recommendations have been made for consideration. If you allow the process to work, the commissioner will be able to review all of the information. The advisory committee was not established just to deal with sprinklers. The advisory committee was established to deal with the entire code. So it's not what you'd consider an evenly weighted committee on just this one particular issue.
Thank you. Anyone else? Any questions for the testifier?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Michelle.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the testimony, and there was a little bit of a theme there that you got to just let the process continue. I feel like we've had 2 years at least of process and discussions and outside committees and stakeholders, and I think we got some pretty strong views amongst the legislature and actually pretty bipartisan views, so I hope we'll continue moving.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Senator Miller. And Representative Lemire, I would speak against your motion. Just to comment to some of the testimony about not following the process, I just want to remind members that the legislature has previously enacted code provisions, and a couple of examples would be radon and carbon monoxide. So this isn't outside of what we've done before. And then, you know, I carried this in the House last year, and it did get, I think it was 97 votes. So we've got a very strong bipartisan position on it. And I think one of the reasons there was such strong support on it is because, you know, we've been very careful to say that this nothing would prevent someone from installing fire sprinkler language. And I wouldn't support any language that would say that we couldn't, that we wouldn't allow the installation of fire sprinklers. But I can remember, I'm looking at my notes from last session, and a few of the people that spoke against this were the Minnesota Modular Housing Association and the Minnesota Housing Partnership last year, and I don't know if their position has changed. I would presume it didn't because of the incredible costs that this would add. If you can imagine, if you lived in a modular home and you needed to put in sprinklers, that would add several thousand dollars to your cost potentially. And I think that's one of the reasons we got a lot of members on both sides concerned about the cost, especially in this economy. So I would speak against your position. I think this is important language. It got broad bipartisan support in both bodies, and I think it's really important that we act on this.
Okay. Looks like we have one more testifier. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Mark Bruner. I'm with the Manufactured Modular Home Association of Minnesota. Just to follow up on Representative Pepin's testimony, yes, we do support this provision continuing to move forward. There currently is a standard in the building code for installing residential fire sprinklers. The the language in the bill simply says that it can't be required, that there is a standard, and the standard wouldn't be eliminated.
Thank you. And just to be clear, you support the proposal in this legislation in the conference committee report. Okay, thank you. Any questions, members? And just to add to what Representative Pepin said, the Senate did vote 53-9 to add this provision. We had strong bipartisan support. And in addition to the organizations that Representative Pepin said, the Builders Association, who we heard from today, is also supportive, and the Minnesota Association of Realtors is supportive. I have done what I could to reach out to Dolly and the governor's office to try to find a compromise on this. That's why we are moving forward with a little bit softer language, in my opinion, that allows the contractor and the homeowner to discuss if they want to put those in when they're doing that contract. And I also heard from several folks back in the district that I represent in southeastern Minnesota that represent affordable housing, Habitat for Humanity, these folks, and they have some strong concerns because what they're trying to do is build new homes for folks that are maybe renting and helping them get into their first home, allowing them to really live the American dream of home ownership. And they fear that this will add additional costs and put up a barrier to some of those folks. So Representative Lemire would like to move to strike section 11 and 18. Would that be the correct motion?
Yeah.
Let's see, Article 1, Section 11, and Article 1, Section 18. All those in favor of the Lemire motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
No. Motion fails. Members, we have the conference committee report with the technical changes in front of us to Senate File 1717. Any further discussion?
Did you move that?
We have not moved it yet.
We need to make a motion to remove that section.
Section two of Article
3. Would you prefer that we do that?
Mr. Chair, that probably would fall under the technical corrections.
Okay.
Just incorporate that into your
meeting. Yep, we'll incorporate that into the conference committee report. Someone like to move the conference committee report for Senate File 1717?
I'll move the conference report for Senate File 1717.
Representative Lemire moves the conference committee report for Senate File 1717. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion carries. The conference committee report is adopted. Anything further? Okay. We'll have staff make the technical changes and...
I love it for the spreadsheet.
And we'll have the conference committee report prepared for signatures, and we'll get that to all the members when that is ready. So with no further discussion, committee is adjourned.
Kids run around. Use it on me.
All right.